Around 4 p.m., Matt Babicki stuck his head into the SC's office and told Sandy he was losing the radio. "Bad static, boss. Worst ever." Shit. Sandy closed his eyes, rubbed his knuckles against them, and wished for Tony. This was his first time as acting sergeant commanding, and while the temporary bump in his paycheck at the end of the month would no doubt be satisfying, this aggravation was not. "Trouble with that goddamn car. Just what I wanted." "Don't take it to heart," Matt said. "It'll shoot off a few sparks and then everything will go back to normal, including the radio. Isn't that the way it usually goes?" Yes, that was the way it usually went. Sandy was not in truth especially worried about the Buick, but what if someone out on patrol found trouble while communications were foobar? Someone who had to call in a 33. "Help me quick." Or a 47. "Send an ambulance." Or worst of all, a 1099. "Officer down." Sandy had well over a dozen guys out there, and at that moment it felt as if every one of them was riding him piggyback. "Listen to me, Matt. Get in my ride. It's Unit 17, and take it down to the bottom of the hill. You should be clear of interference there. Call every one of ours currently running the roads and tell them base dispatch is temporarily 17, code D."
"Aw, Sandy, Jesus, isn't that a little—"
"I don't have time to listen to your imitation of Siskel and Ebert at the movies just now," Sandy said. He had never felt more impatient with police communications officer Babicki's whiny brand of foot-dragging bullshit than he did then.
"Just do it."
"But I won't be here to see—"
"No,
probably you won't," Sandy's voice rising a little now. "That's one you'll absolutely have to put on your TS list before you send it to the chaplain." Matt started to say something else, took a closer look at Sandy's face, and wisely decided to keep his mouth shut. 2 minutes later, Sandy saw him headed down the hill, behind the wheel of Unit 17. "Good," Sandy muttered. "Stay there a while, you little back-talking pissant." Sandy went out to Shed B, where there was quite a little crowd. Most of them were troopers, but some were motor pool guys in the grease-stained green dickies that were their unofficial uniform. After 4 years of living with the Buick, none of them were afraid, exactly, but they were a rather nervy group that day, just the same. When you saw 20 degrees roll off the thermometer on a warm summer day, in a room where the air conditioning consisted of an occasionally open door, it was hard not to believe that something large was in the works. Kurt had been back long enough to set up a number of experiments. All he had time to arrange, Sandy guessed. On the Buick's front seat, he'd placed a Nike sneaker box with some crickets in it. The frog cage was on the back seat. There was only one frog in it this time, but it was a whopper, one of those marsh bullfrogs with the bulgy yellow-black eyes. He had also taken the window box of flowers, which had been outside Matt Babicki's office window, and stuck them in the Buick's trunk. Last but not least, he took Mr. Dillon for a promenade out there, toured him all around the car on his leash, the full 360, just to see what would happen. Orvy Garrett didn't like that much, but Kurt talked him into it. In most respects, Kurt was still a little rough around the edges and a little wet behind the ears, but when it came to the Buick, he could be as smooth as a riverboat gambler. Nothing happened during Dee's walk, not that time, but it was clear the troop mascot would rather have been just about anywhere else. He hung at the end of his leash so hard it choked him a little, and he walked with his head down and his tail lowered, giving the occasional dry cough. He looked at the Buick, but he looked at everything else out there as well, as if whatever it was he didn't like had spread out from the bogus car until it contaminated the whole shed. When Kurt brought him outside again and handed the leash back to Orville, he said, "There's something going on. He feels it, and so do I. But it's not like before." He saw Sandy and repeated it. "Not like before." "No," Sandy said, then nodded at Mr. D. "At least he's not howling."
"Not yet," Orville said. "Come on, D. Let's go back in the barracks. You did good. I'll give you a bones."
What Orvy gave Kurt was a final reproachful look. Mr. Dillon trotted neatly at Trooper Garrett's right knee, no longer needing the leash to keep him at heel.